good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NoDem Radio Network. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. It's good to be back in Atlanta. It is indeed. We were in, as you probably know, we were in Seattle for a couple of days for a forum sponsored by KPTK, AM 1090, in that beautiful city. More on that in a few minutes. I want to thank Sam Cedar for sitting in for me on Thursday night as I traveled to Seattle for that town hall meeting. I'm going to play a cut from that meeting tonight because I'm pissed off, and I'm going to bring it up. At the bottom of this hour, a nasty little thing happened that Ed Schultz directed my way. And since I was not on my stage, I was on a stage that was being provided courtesy of KPTK and CBS Infinity. So I chose not to answer the nastiness at the time. But you can bet your ass I'm going to answer it tonight. So we'll bring it up a little bit later in the program. Before I get into some of the topics here, I want to thank all of you in Seattle who came to the event. It was just, once again, it was astonishing. It was like being in the ante room in hell, being in that auditorium. It was so hot. But what was interesting to me was that nobody left during the break, about an hour into it. We just all sat there and sweat together. It was really a thrill to meet all of you, the folks that I did. And thanks to everyone at KPTK AM 1090. For hosting such a fantastic event. They were nothing but absolutely courteous and delightful to those of us who had come in for that event. Little later, also in the program tonight, big day in D.C. Senate votes on Iraq withdrawal. Bush backs the Abbas government in Palestine. And Senator Vitter's mea culpa with his wife. Oh, and don't forget the big Catholic Church payout. So we have a lot of ground to cover here tonight. Speaking of the sex scandal, the latest Republican sex scandal, and I don't want to speak about it too much because it just embarrasses me, but Senator Vitter had a press briefing today, and his wife was right there with him, and I watched her, of course. I've seen enough snakes in my life. I don't have to look at Vitter. He got caught with his wee-wee where it shouldn't be. He's no different from any other right-wing, family values, Jesus loves me and God forgives me no matter what I do. Freak. They're all the same. So, you know, it's no surprise. But I watched his wife, and I felt so sorry for her. There she stood next to this guy and declared her undying love. And, yeah, it was the media's fault. They made it very rough on her and her family, and she's probably right there. The media followed them to church the other day, which was probably a good thing for Vitter, because that way he's got a further record of his devout Christianity and the fact that he truly, truly, truly believes in family values. Don't pay any attention to what has happened over the course of his life as he talks family values and ultra-conservatism out of this side of the mouth. I don't know, this side of the mouth, he's out looking for somebody else he can hump. So, you know, to hell with this guy. To hell with Vitter. To hell with all these right-wing, hypocritical, so-called Christian Republicans. They all make me sick. But I felt kind of sad for his wife. What was her name? Wendy? Was that what? And her standing there beside this scum-sucking cheater. And, okay, she forgave him. And in one sense, she's right. It's nobody's business but theirs. But what makes it the rest of our business is the fact that Vitter goes on the record, you see, and goes public with his fake, cheesy, crappy, so-called morality. That's what makes it our business. So, Mrs. Vitter, when you legitimately complain, and I think it is legitimate, about being tracked by the media, don't blame the media, Mrs. Vitter. Blame your husband. It's your husband who presents himself as this great moral arbiter, and he's going to tell the rest of the United States what's right and what's wrong. And yet he's a liar, and he breaks his vows, and he pees all over the Ten Commandments. There is a commandment that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, Mr. Vitter claims that God took a break from whatever the hell he was doing and forgave him. Well, okay, if you folks want to believe that, have at it. But enough on Vitter. I just felt very, very strange seeing his wife stand there alongside her little adulterer, forgiving him, patting him on the head and telling him it's okay. All right. Richard Mellon Scaife, you all know who he is, a right-wing thug of the highest degree. He owns a Pittsburgh newspaper, the Tribune Review, which is nothing, but it makes the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal look liberal. But Richard Mellon Scaife has been a little demon, hasn't he? Salting our political system with money to destroy our faith in our own political system. He led the unrelenting attack on the Clintons and still does. He stands in awe of the cleanest. I don't know why these guys get so freaked out by Clinton's penis, but they do. And Richard Mellon Scaife was one of the leaders. He's the one that funded the Arkansas Project that was insistent on trying to turn up any rock they could to find something like, oh, Paula Jones, here's one. That's been Richard Mellon Scaife's career. He's a billionaire voyeur who gets his kicks out of digging around in somebody else's underpants. Now, if that's what gets him off, I guess he's certainly entitled to get off that way, except for the fact that he uses his position and his money to corrupt and pollute and otherwise attempt to destroy our political system. Well, guess what? Having said all that, his newspaper... Oh, I still hate him. I can't even say the name Richard Mellon Scaife without wanting to barf. But his newspaper yesterday called the Bush administration's plans to stay the course in Iraq, quote, a prescription for American suicide, end quote. The editorial in that newspaper then went on to say, quote, and quite frankly, here it comes, during last Thursday's news conference, when George Bush started blathering about sometimes the decisions you make and the consequences don't enable you to be loved, we had to question his mental stability. End quote. You're questioning your boy's mental? You are the sons of bitches who assisted in putting him in office. What's the matter, Scaife? You didn't get quite the tax break you wanted? You didn't quite get the blood and the gore and the war that you wanted? The editorial continued, President Bush warns that U.S. withdrawal would risk mass killings on a horrific scale. What do we have today, sir? The editorial goes on. If the president won't do the right thing and end this war, the people must. The House has voted to withdraw combat troops from Iraq by April. The Senate must follow suit. Our brave troops should take great pride that they rid Iraq of Saddam Hussein, and they should have no shame in leaving Iraq. America has done its job. It's time for the Iraqis to do theirs. Yada, 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 yada. America has done its job. That is, we went into a country that did nothing to us and smashed it, turned it into a failed state. So while Richard Mellon Scaife's newspaper makes a very salient point questioning Bush's mental stability, it does what so much of American media still does. Well, we've done our job. What was our job, you right-wing neocon bastards, huh? What was our job? Was our job to invade a nation based on lies? Was our job to execute a man to whom we gave the power and the weaponry and the money and the intelligence to commit the atrocities that he committed during the 80s? Huh? Is that our job? So to hell with the Pittsburgh Press or Tribune Review, to hell with Richard Mellon Scaife, and certainly to hell with George W. Bush. But it always amazes me when these right-wing dogs finally turn on each other and start eating each other while they are still alive. That's always fun to watch, isn't it? We'll be back after the break.
Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
redefining war on our terms.
Yeah, sure are. 21 past the hour. I'm sure you know this by now. The Bush crime family said last Saturday that it's going to veto a bipartisan plan to expand children's health insurance. Yeah, oh my God. The legislation was put together over the last 6 months by senior members of the Senate Finance Committee, both Democrat and Republican. This promise by this Bush thug puts him on the other side of the fence with, of course, the Democratic majority in Congress, but also with a substantial number of Republicans in Congress and governors of both parties who want to expand the program to cover some, not all, of the nation's 8 million uninsured children. What kind of a hellhole do we live in? We have 8 million uninsured, and don't tell me, well, the parents ought to take care. Listen, we live in Bush world. We have 8 million uninsured children. That means they don't have well baby care. That means they probably don't see a physician for a regular checkup. Jesus, I hate these people, these Bush thugs. Tony Fratto, a White House spokesman, said, quote, "The president's senior advisors will certainly recommend a veto of this proposal, and there's no question the president will veto it." The program, Children's Health Insurance, the CHIP program, which at any time in the last year insured about 8 million people, is set to expire September 30th. The Senate Finance Committee is expected to approve the Senate plan this week and then send it to the full Senate for action later this month. And Senator Max Baucus, the Montana Democrat who's chairman of the committee, said he would move ahead despite this threat from Thug Boy in the White House. Baucus said the Senate will not be deterred from helping more kids in need. The president should stop playing politics and start working with Congress to help kids through renewal of this program. Now, the proposal that the House or the Senate's put together would increase current levels of spending by $35 billion over the next 5 years. That's $7 billion a year increase over the next 5 years. That would bring the total to $60 billion. What is that? 6 weeks of war in Iraq? The Congressional Budget Office says the plan would reduce the number of uninsured children by 4.1 million. Now, there are 8 million uninsured children. So this reduces it down to 4 million uninsured children. That's all. Cut it in half. But half a loaf is, well, you know. Now, how's it going to be financed? Is it going to be financed with a tax increase? Huh? Is it going to be financed with more on your income tax, more on your FICA, more on this one? No. The new spending would be financed by an increase in the federal excise tax on tobacco products. The tax on cigarettes would rise to $1 a pack from the current 40 cents. Fratto, the White House ugly bastard spokesman, said, quote, "Tax increases are neither necessary nor advisable to fund the program. A tax on tobacco products to cut the number of uninsured children in this country in half. And this Bush bastard is going to veto it. A tax on tobacco products. Think about it. Bush puts cancer ahead of children. Ah, you filthy scum sucker. Fratto says the president has other reasons, too, to veto this bipartisan Senate plan. Fratto said, quote, "The proposal would dramatically expand the children's health insurance program, adding non-poor children to the program, and more than doubling the level of spending. This will have the effect," Mr. Fratto said, "of encouraging many to drop private coverage to go on the government-subsidized program." Oh, my God, we can't have that, can we? Well, that's socialized medicine. No, let the little children choke to death. Let them get diseases. Let them not get their vaccines. Don't talk to me about thimerosal. I'm not in the mood. Make sure they don't get checkups when they develop sore throats. Make sure they don't have dental checkups. No glasses. Make sure that, as Bush said last week, if somebody needs medical care, go to the emergency room. compassionate conservative. Mr. Bush, you make me vomit bile. And every single one of you Republicans, how dare you? But you don't give a damn about children. Unless they're about a millionth of an inch long. And then you wet your pants. You'll do anything to save a zygote or a fertilized egg. But let it be a child, and you rat bastard sit back and say,
well, we don't think there ought to be a tax increase.
Y'all need to go to hell. That's where you need to go.
When they say,
we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
Twenty-six before the hour. So I just got this email from Steve, who writes, "Hi, Mike. This is the subject line says Ed Schultz in Seattle. He says, hi, Mike. I know he's not one of your favorite people. He's not my favorite progressive talker either, but it's not personal. But for whatever it's worth, he did mention you on his show today, and he didn't say anything derogatory, not while I was listening anyway. He mentioned the Enough t-shirt you had on, said he liked it. I think he said he would have liked one for himself. Whatever, I wasn't there. I'm sure you have a story to tell tonight. I'm always interested, but you just got through mentioning how much you enjoy it when Republicans turn on each other and eat their own. Signed, Steve." I'm real aware of that, Steve, that I just finished a screed about Republicans eating their own, and I know the Democratic Party is has his reputation of being a big tent. Ed Schultz is a member of the Joe Lieberman wing of the Democratic Party, or the Zell Miller wing of the Democratic Party, and there's room for him. That's fine. I personally think the politics that are put out there by certain talk show hosts, including Schultz, who present themselves as a liberal, are points of view that I don't agree with. But that's just the way it goes. That's fine. That's not my problem. But I refuse to let somebody, not even another talk show host who claims to be liberal, suggest that I might support on a public forum in front of 1,000 people being taped by C-SPAN that this guy suggests that I might support the extinction of the Jewish people or that I don't want Jews to have a homeland. I refuse to let that sit there. Now, I'm going to play a cut from Saturday night's forum, and I want you to listen to this.
I think we need to realize that there are Islamic extremists that do want to destroy America. They do. No, they do. Being in Iraq is not the right policy. Being in Iraq is not the right policy. But we've got
obviously, this is Schultz.
We've got an issue of Islamic extremists. And we have Osama bin Laden on the run, and there's no question that Americans are for justice. But I think the Democratic Party would be more than remiss if they were turn and say, you know, we got to have peace at all costs. It may not be our choice. We have to defend ourselves. And it for what?
From what?
Oh, from what? Well, let me ask you this. Do you think it's important to go get bin Laden and his hoods in Afghanistan? You don't?
It is.
This is going to be a major campaign issue. How are the Democrats going to fight terrorism? And how are Democrats going to fight this? See, now everybody's getting their back up. There is no doubt that we are definitely as a party and definitely as a country going to have to resolve that what we're doing right now is not correct, but that doesn't mean we have to run from the problem that people do want to take us out. Now, what do you want to do about it?
All right. Let me add my two cents worth. The United States, along with a couple other imperialist countries, have treated the Arabs...
And this is me.
...house niggers for the past 75 years because they've had what we need, and that's oil. Now, why do the Iranians not like us? Well, it started in 1953 when we overthrew their government and installed the Shah. Why do the Central Americans hate us? Well, let's start again with 1953 when we overthrew governments left and right. I disagree with Ed on this one. I don't think that there are Arab terrorists or Islamic terrorists who want to come here and destroy us because of who we are. I think they want us to get the hell out of what they consider to be their country, their sphere of influence. Now, it just so happens that I think I'm not a religious person. As a matter of fact, I don't like religion because I look at the history of humankind and I see we're ankle deep in blood all over the planet because of religion. That's just my opinion. But as long as we support the oppression of the Palestinian people, as long as we support the overthrow of Middle Eastern governments, as long as we back repressive regimes like, let me think of one. Oh, I got one. Saudi Arabia. As long as we do that, we're talking on this stage tonight about authentic leadership. Anyone that supports that kind, what, Kuwait, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, those are democratic countries. If George Bush is so interested in democracy, let's invade them. But we won't, because they cater, they help, they support us. So this talk about Islamic terrorists, when did that start? Did that start when we armed them, when we fought a proxy war in Afghanistan against the Soviet? When did it start? Did it start in the 50s? Did it start after World War II when we carved up the Middle East? When did it start? You know, I'm not here to talk about Osama bin Laden in the first place. I don't even know that he really exists the way a CIA paints him. But what did he say? What did he say prior? I think it was prior to the attack. He said, we want justice in Palestine. We want the American army out of our holy places. That's Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And what was the third issue?
He wanted the price of oil to go to $100 a barrel.
Was that what it was?
It was 98, yeah.
All right. What did he get? Bush immediately, not immediately, but Bush got our military is no longer in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they got.
So it had to go somewhere. Where do we put it? Oh, let's bring freedom to the Iraqi people. That's where our military is now.
No, Mike, let me ask something. Mike, how do you feel about the Jewish people? Do they have a right to a homeland?
How do you feel about the Catholic people?
But this is the core of the whole thing.
No, it is
the core of the whole thing.
Absolutely not.
When you have the Jewish faith that is being threatened with extinction by a bunch of radical countries around them, the United States is going to come to their aid. That's what's going to happen. Well, no. You know, look, Clinton did it. Bill Clinton aligned himself with Israel, and the United States is going to align itself with Israel. Now, we have also tried, the Democratic Party has tried to negotiate a settlement between the Israelis and the Arabs. In fact, there's no country on the face of the earth that has tried to bring those two sides together. We put a tremendous amount of resource into it.
Wait a minute, but I think that you people are really liquored up.
No, I'm not a neocon. I'm an American. I didn't come here to get heckled like that. I'm an American. I pay my taxes, I speak my piece, I give you an open microphone, and I don't believe in the extinction of the Jewish people.
I'm going to be the second liberal on the stage tonight to say I agree with Pat Buchanan, which is terrifying, I know. But he said the same thing, Mike, that you said, that they don't hate us for our freedom, they hate us for our policies. And
he wrote an entire book about it, in fact.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, Osama bin Laden. Yeah, Osama bin Laden is not sitting in his cave going, "Ooh, with the Bill of Rights. Oh, this makes me so mad." You know, I hate that Lexus commercial where the chick gets to drive. Ooh.
All right, that gives you kind of. We tried to provide the whole thing in context, including the round of applause Ed Schultz got when he said he doesn't believe in the extinction of the Jewish people. The assumption being that I do. See, you know, I'm very familiar with this. I'm very familiar with the subtleties that are used against people who speak out in favor of Palestinian rights. If anyone who has listened to this program over the years does not understand, and I'm sure Ed Schultz does understand, that I believe in a two-state solution, that I believe in an equal rights for the Jewish immigrants as well as the Palestinian residents. I believe that everybody in that sad, torn-up little strip of land should have an equal chance. That's not what is going on. What is going on in Israel and the occupied territories is the same sort of thing that went on for years in South Africa. Jimmy Carter called it right. It is apartheid. Get the sand out of your eyes. Get the muck out of your ears. Get the lies out of your head and do your own investigation. And then come back to this program and tell me what you discovered. Now, for Ed Schultz, who apparently has some sort of an ego problem, this guy would not stay with us in the same hotel we stayed in, Stephanie and Tom and the rest of us. He would not ride in the same limo as the rest of us. He took himself off. I guess he figured he's just that much better than we are because he claims to have how many listeners? Well, I've got 2 million listeners. Ed, it doesn't matter a damn how many listeners you have. Rush Limbaugh has 17 million. Does that make Rush Limbaugh authentic? That was another thing we talked about on that stage all night long with authenticity. So I do not allow people to infer directly, indirectly, sideways, upside down, like Ed Schultz did, that I'm an anti-Semite. And Ed knows that. And Ed did that deliberately. And I'm not going to let it pass. Now, I'll say, you know, I bring this up now because this is my program. It's not KPTK's stage, and I appreciate the fact that they gave us that stage, but I'm not going to bring this, I'm not going to let this slide. That was the last time I will appear in any public forum with Ed Schultz. Now, if you want to hear the rest of the town hall meeting, go to am1090seattle.com. That's all I have to say. I just need to set the record straight. I don't want the Jew. I don't want the Jews to not have a homeland, and I do not want their extinction. Please.
I would appreciate you knowing. I thought your love had come to stay.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Ten before the hour. If you wonder, if you ever wonder why this is one of the few programs, if not the only program in talk radio, where you hear even the idea broached that the Palestinian people may have some rights, that they're not just vermin to be kicked aside by the settlers, that they're not just pawns to be used by various Democratic and Republican administrations and candidates. If you've ever wondered, well, gee, why do I only hear that stuff on Malloy's program where it concerns mainstream talk radio? This may help you out. This comes from the Jewish Week, which also publishes the Jewish World, I believe. It's at their website, and it's in their hard publication, too, but it's the JewishWeek.com. There's an open. The title is Keeping Talk Radio Pro-Israel. The subtitle is The Publisher of Talkers Magazine and the President's Conference Work Around the Dial. And it's written by Jonathan Mark, the associate editor. It says Michael Harrison, the publishers of Talkers Magazine, the leading industry publication for talk radio, told the Cybercast News Service that Air America Radio is, quote, heading in the right direction. But whether talk radio, be it left or right, is fair to Israel is in fact very important to Michael Harrison. For the past 5 years, Harrison and his publication have been shepherding more than 50 talk show hosts to Israel in conjunction with America's Voices for Israel, AVI, a group founded and presided over by Malcolm Henlon, Executive Vice Chair of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Michael Harrison, the publishers of Talkers Magazine, is a member of AVI's Board of Directors, and he recently devoted an entire glossy front page of Talkers Magazine to these Israel trips. And on one trip several weeks ago, conducted in conjunction with the United Jewish Communities, among the radio personalities traveling with Michael Harrison was Lionel, the unimonikered host newly hired as Air America's 9 a.m. to mid-morning slot. Among the places in Israel where Harrison's group ventured was Sderot, the daily target of Hamas's rocket war against Israel. Unless the rockets stop, and Hamas says they won't, it will be intriguing to hear how this will play out on Lionel's show and elsewhere on Air America. That goes on and on, and then it says, the Talkers, America Voices for Israel group that went to the Middle East was not only taken to Israel's medical and science facilities as well as cultural showcases, but to, quote, the areas under siege, end quote, said Harrison. And Lionel was photographed with one of the Qassam rockets that have panicked Sderot. The experience seemed to have an impact on Air America's new host, as Lionel told Michael Harrison that he recognized that Israelis, quote, live with the real and palpable specter of imminent war at a moment's notice, end quote. Unlike those in Air America's constituency who have severely criticized Israel as an apartheid state, Lionel added, quote, Israel is a testament as to how a people disparate in religion, culture, and history and language somehow coalesce and coexist in a seemingly unfathomable harmony. If some are perplexed about the Zionist tilt on talk radio, in defiance of what is found elsewhere in the media, perhaps some credit belongs to the persistence of Talkers Magazine publisher Michael Harrison and the ongoing educational efforts of their America's Voices for Israel. Oh my God. Lionel says Israel is a testament to how a people disparate in religion? Really? You mean Israel is not made up of folks who are Jewish? Isn't it a Jewish state? Lionel, huh? Now, this brings together an awful lot for me. I used to be one of Michael Harrison's fair-haired boys. I might as well get this all out. I used to be in his heavy hundred every year. All of a sudden, I disappeared, and I disappeared when I went to work for Air America, for God's sake. All of a sudden, I'm syndicated by a liberal talk network, and I won the Air Award in New York, I won the Air Award in Chicago, and Michael Harrison drops me. Not only am I not in the Hot 100 anymore, so-called, I'm not even listed in his second group of 250 up-and-comers. So to Michael Harrison, this program did not even rank in the top 350 radio talk shows in America. Now, that's bat squeeze. But now I understand why. Because I had the absolute temerity to question UK, US, Israel policy against the people in the occupied territories. And every time I did it, I would get tons of emails. You anti-Semitic goy cup. You son of a bitch. How dare you attack Israel? On and on and on. Which I never did. Israeli policy where it concerns the people in that godforsaken strip named called Gaza and the occupied territories? Yes. Do I stand up for their rights? You're goddamn right I will. And I will continue to do so as long as I have a microphone. Now, that's a pretty risky thing to say in the past, because every time I've said that, I lose the microphone. I'm angry tonight. I am really angry. But now, you know, when I went back to the hotel after Saturday night's gig in Seattle, I kept thinking, why would Ed Schultz pull that out of the air and ask me if I believed that the Jewish people had a right to exist in his own inimitable way? I kept thinking, well, we weren't even talking about that. We were talking about the so-called Islamic terrorists and why they hate us. And Ed Schultz pulls that old, it's like back in the 50s when they said, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? About 7 past the hour, I just need to add one thing about, as long as this Jewish-Palestinian issue has popped up here, Israeli Jews, Palestinian Arabs, Palestinian Christians, whatever, the strongest peace movement trying to find a peaceful solution between Jews and Arabs in that sad country is not found here. It's found in Israel. There are several Israeli peace groups. If you want to see a movie that will knock your socks off, and I told you about this, take a look at Occupation 101. Almost every voice in it is a Jewish voice from Israel. People who are there. People who see what their government is doing to the Palestinian people. Now, I don't know why talk show hosts in this country are terrified to the point that they will not bring this issue up. They simply will not. I've said it before on this program. I hate hypocrisy, and I think I hate cowardice even more. But I need to make the point that some of the most proactive, strongest Palestinian Jewish peace organizations who are struggling to try to end this insanity are not in this country. They are in Israel. And they work under just almost impossible conditions sometimes. They are suspect from the Palestinian side. There are people in the Israeli government who would like to see them disappear, and yet they struggle on. So just so we're clear about that, it's just such a horrific, maddening cause of so much that's going on in the Middle East that doesn't have to go on. And we have people in this country who have a microphone or a camera or both, and the cowardly bastards won't stand up for justice. They won't do it. Well, to hell with you. All right, let's do. I know this doesn't need to be said, but Ed Schultz is not on the program tonight to defend himself or take calls, so no calls about Ed Schultz. All right, I brought that up as a personal matter because there were over 1,000 people packed into that that auditorium the other night, and it will be carried on C-SPAN, and it will be available online at AM 1090's website. The video. Within the next couple of days. So, and again, this is my defense That was not my stage. That stage belonged to KPTK, AM 1090 in Seattle, and out of respect to them, I was not going to bring up any kind of rebuttal or a bitch slap, which was certainly called for. I decided to wait until tonight. Okay, let's move on. Oh, my God. William Rivers Pitt is on the line calling from Boston. Hey, Will, what's up?
How you doing, sir?
I'm getting by. How about you?
I'm getting by pretty well myself. You will always, by the way, be in my top 100.
And you mine.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Quite a day we had today, huh?
Indeed.
Well, I told the gentleman to answer the phones that whatever you want to talk about, I'm game for. So what are we talking about?
Let's talk about the Reed-Levitt Amendment.
What do you think about it?
I'd rather hear what you think about it. Well, you're the writer. Look, let me tell you why. Writers take time. They take a look at an issue. They try to find balance. They investigate. They sit down. They put a sentence together. They go back and restructure it. Talk show hosts shoot from the hip. I don't want to hear me. I want to hear you.
Well, first of all, I need to make a shout out to Democratic Underground.
Yes, indeed.
And the problem that I have is that I'm apparently, well, I don't think that I reach the qualification these days of a very good liberal or a very good progressive.
Because, why?
Well, because I'm reading over the text of this Reed-Levitt Amendment, and it's got no teeth. It really won't do much of anything on its own face to get the troops out and end the war, but I think it's a fantastic thing in terms of the politics of it. One of the things that I've been finding frustrating in terms of dealing with, say, for example, the issue of impeachment or the issue of legislating a timetable for withdrawal in the war, is that in the Senate specifically, which we can't get around, you need 60 votes to get over the inevitable Republican filibuster,
right,
and 67 votes to get over the inevitable Bush veto, which means we need Republicans. Now, one of the things that I've been appreciating, this is part of what I hope to be just a cascade of legislation. There are 34 senators that have to run next November for re-election. 22 of them are Republicans. All of them are stapled to their previous support of this catastrophe.
Right.
Each and every time we put another vote before the Senate, it requires them to make the Hobson's choice of stand with Bush and get beat in November, or abandon him and maybe win their seat but face the wrath of the White House.
Right.
This is one of those things. I've been saying this for a while now. A lot of people have been saying it. Before we get to any kind of tactical, strategic, military solution to this situation in Iraq, there has to be a political solution, because, unfortunately, the guys who control the troops, the guys who give the orders to the Pentagon, George and the boys, they don't want to go. They have no interest in leaving. They'll veto every single thing that comes their way.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't build a coalition with guys like Warner and the crew that he can bring, Olympia Snow and the moderates, to have a veto-proof majority in the Senate that we can pass this legislation on, it's never going to happen.
So you're calling pretty clearly for some sort of a not an end to the war between Democrats and Republicans, but an armistice, sort of like between North and South Korea. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely not. I want to absolutely positively go to war against the Republicans. I want to staple Iraq votes to their forehead.
Oh, okay.
So every single time another one comes up, it'll be a little bit closer to election time. We will get more and more defectors. They are, if you look at this in raw, disgusting politics, if you can separate it from the war and just deal with the politics of it, good outcome number one is we get 67 people total, or 70, or however many we can get,
right,
and wind up being able to overcome the veto. Good outcome number two is these guys stick to Bush. We beat most of them or all of them in November. We wind up with hopefully a Democratic president, but certainly a supermajority in the Senate, and we can really start to change things up to and including repairing this ridiculous Supreme Court.
I'll sign up for that. I got the impression, though, when you called in, I may have misheard you, that all of a sudden you don't feel like a very good liberal or a very good progressive.
Well, I've been finding myself in a lot of really sort of tough arguments with people that I essentially agree with about the way to go about this. There's a lot of anger within the Democratic base at the Democratic majority in Congress. Pelosi gets her lion's share of it over the last appropriations bill, the last spending bill. there's just a lot of frustration and anger out there, and it's really kind of strange. You were talking a little bit about, you were talking about Israel-Palestine before.
Right.
And before you get into all the politics and the nitty-gritty and the details of it, the problem over there is the same problem here and everywhere where there are warmongers and maniacs. It's the extremists. Every religion has its Taliban wing. Every economic theory has its Taliban wing. Never forget that it was Yitzhak Rabin who was shot in the back by an Israeli, by a Jewish Israeli citizen, part of the Taliban wing of Judaism.
Right, exactly.
There is a little bit of that, and I'm as much in hearing of it as anybody else, within the Democratic base. We're our own little cadre of zealots and absolutists. When the Lieberman Amendment about Iran came up today and it passed 97-0, there was a part of me that was sort of happy about it. Because no matter how bad things get, we play by the old rules no matter how much it screws us. To wit, the president gets votes like that. Always has. That's the rules by which it used to get that before all this mayhem cracked off.
Hey, let me get you to hold on, William. Let me give you a thought while you're on hold. You know, the Lieberman Amendment, 97-0, that's the same percentage that Stalin used to get, or Khrushchev, or Brezhnev in their votes. You know what I'm saying? Stick around. We're talking with Will Rivers Pitt. We're going to continue the conversation in just a minute. Nice treat. Thanks for calling in, Will. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
21 past the hour, we're talking with Will Rivers Pitt, famous author and raconteur. Will, I have a question for you. The Democratic base, is not the same as the Democratic majority in the House and the Senate. I'm sure you agree with that.
Well, there are more base-like people in the House than there are in the Senate, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, go ahead.
The definition of the base is a little bit malleable. You can say that the base is people like us, the activist people, the anti-war people, and that's absolutely true because they're significant. They get significant votes from us, but African Americans, unions, women are also a significant portion of the base. The Latino community is coming up as a so. It's difficult to pin down. When I talk about the base, I'm talking about the people who have been taken to the streets and organizing against this war before it ever even got off.
Right.
I wasn't making my point very well before. Your question about the Stalin and the 97 votes is well met. But it kind of feeds into what I was talking about. What I was saying is that I kind of quietly appreciate the fact that these guys still kind of obey the forms, even though they're kicking themselves in the head. Yes, it's a scary majority that 97 out of 100 senators want to go and attack Iran. I haven't actually read the amendment yet, so I don't know if that's what it says.
Well, pretty much. An email from a listener wants you to explain. He says, "How could anything Lieberman proposed pass unanimously?"
Because the traditions of the Senate, particularly constitutionally, when you're talking about the role of the executive, it's to execute foreign policy. These kind of votes come through the Senate. They have for decades now. Generations come through. The president always wins those votes, whoever the president may be, because the Senate gives him the power to execute foreign policy. It seems it is, right now, an unbelievably bad idea to give this bunch of maniacs such carte blanche. But this is heading to what I was saying before. This is a terrible analogy, but it makes a little bit of sense to me. When Gandhi was asked the question, what would pacifism do in the face of somebody like Hitler? He said there would be great losses, but inevitably it would prevail. No matter what is in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You I think what we're all fighting for, in my mind, is the Constitution, the
right.
Bill of Rights, the processes of legislation, the separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
When, no matter what, the Democratic majority follows the pro forma rules that were in place before these guys started tearing up everything, it's a nod in the direction of what was and what should be.
Well, I agree with that. But by the same token, when you have, and I haven't read Lieberman's amendment either, I understand that it stops short of asking for a declaration of war on Iran, but it has to do with a possibly specious claim that Iranians are now supporting somebody in Iraq that is killing American soldiers. And of course, the answer to that is that there are several countries that are supporting operations in Iraq that are killing Iraqi people. So, you know, the whole thing to me is nonsense and garbage. But
well, it's finger-pointing. And, yeah, it's absolutely
right.
Exactly.
That's like saying, let's all have a vote today in favor of ice cream. Forget the flavor, because some of you might not like chocolate, but all in favor of ice cream, raise your hand. Well, what the hell?
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. It was a duck and cover. I'm looking forward to reading the thing. I'm hoping there's no money. There's no troop allocation.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's one of those sense of the Senate to things that can be extremely dangerous, because now Bush, and Lieberman knows this, I shouldn't say Bush, Cheney can now use the, you know, Cheney is pushing that before this administration crashes and burns, we invade another country. Cheney wants it so bad it gets him sexually aroused. Well, no, I guess it doesn't do that, but and that's what Lieberman's amendment was. The fact that it passed 97-0 is staggering.
Well, it is to be hoped that if an actual piece of legislation comes up that requires, that actually calls for an attack, calls for troop allocations, calls for money, that there will be a hell of a lot. I think, once again, it comes back to building this coalition against the Iraq occupation, because it's a fairly straightforward argument. If we're basically getting chased out of Iraq one drop of blood at a time, it does not stand to reason that we should authorize these completely ineffectual idiots to go in and attack another country. I would be surprised. I've been surprised before, but I'd be surprised if a real meat and potatoes go to war bill comes before the Congress that it actually gets approved. I'd be shocked.
Well, I would too, but we are in an era of the unitary executive branch where these people don't need permission from anyone. Will, we got a break. Thanks, pal. Always good to hear from you. Drive safe. Take care. Watch your back, okay?
Of course, sir. You too. Thanks a lot.
All right, Will. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
This is no time for celebration. This is no time for saluting flags. This is no time for inner searchings. The future is at hand. This is no time for phony rhetoric. This is no time for political speech. This is a time for action, because the future's within reach. This is the time.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Let's go to some phone calls here for a few moments. We have two open lines, by the way, and the number is 800-989-1480. Tim is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, Tim.
Hey, my brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm so glad to hear your voice again, man. Hey, yeah, the Catholics, it's like, I used to be Catholic, and the more I hear what these guys are saying, the more I'll just be very glad the Catholic Church is put down, destroyed.
Who was it, the French philosopher Diderot, who said the people will not be free, I'm paraphrasing, until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest?
Right, right, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well... Yeah, it's, well, you know, that movie Zeitgeist does deal with that. So, you know, that's all I'm going to say about that. But if you want to know everything about that, it does work. But, you know, the Catholics, it's like, my God, I cannot believe it. Like, I went to a church here in my city, And they're trying to get $10 million to fix up this old building. Sure, it's nice looking, but it's like all the people that could be helped in this city or in the world.
Well, you know what they're going to have to use the $10 million for now, don't you?
What's that?
Well, for the lawsuit.
Oh, of course, yes.
That was settled by Cardinal Mahoney or Bishop, uh-huh. whatever the hell he is, down in L.A. What was it? $650 million
or something, I think.
I don't know. It's just an enormous amount of money,
yeah.
and
yeah.
they're going to rely on Catholic churches around. You know, this is. I got an email from somebody who pointed out to me that the rape of children by Catholic priests
mm-hmm.
Is nothing new. It goes back to the 18th century.
The priests have been having, you know, affairs and children, you know, ever since the darn thing started.
Yeah, well, sure. When you have the kind of power that the Catholic Church mm-hmm. grants to these people, I don't know. I just get sick of hearing story after story. Sick not because the media is invading somebody's privacy, mm-hmm. but because they're reporting on what is just this is an abomination. I mean,
this is
astonishing stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it just keeps going. What's it been? 5 years now since the Boston newspapers first broke the story,
right.
About child rape perpetrated by these rat bastards, and it just doesn't stop.
No, it doesn't. I had a brother who was a priest, so I have kind of intimate knowledge about how these suckers work, and they've got an agenda that I finally now understand that no one else on this earth could even understand.
Well, I hear you. All right, Tim.
Yeah. Hey, can you help me with one thing, though, Mike?
I'll try very quickly. What?
Okay, bro. I'm not sure why your webmaster is deleting my post, but I've got an extremely important announcement about Zeitgeist, and he will not let me keep a post out there so everybody knows that this is what it is.
Well, I don't know. You have to...
I've been trying now for all day.
Well, I don't have anything to do,
or
I should put it this way. All the authority of the MikeMalloy.com message board has been given to people who over the years have demonstrated their ability to handle that forum and handle it quite well. Are they going to piss people off occasionally? Probably so. But I leave those decisions up to them. I'm sorry, Tim, you have to work it out with them. Thanks for your call, though. Ron is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I don't know if you remember my voice or not, but I've been calling you, I'd say every three times a year. And the last time I called your Kathy Hip.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I don't remember, but you got a great voice.
Yeah. Well, I'm 66, been down the road, and I've done a lot of studying around Zionism.
Uh-huh.
So as far as I can tell, the only two people who are not afraid to go in and actually study the stuff are you and Christine Kraft here in Sacramento. And I've called and listened to everybody, so I'm not going to name names, but it's either they're in denial or they got a problem with ego or brainwashed or they simply don't know the facts. So one of the things I did was when I began studying, you know, this difficult question of Zionism, I sort of said, I'm going to read a history of Zionism, but it's going to be by a Israeli and or Jewish author.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at Norman Finkelstein. Now, if you could ever get him on your program, I don't know if you know.
Well, the American Jewish community, to a certain extent, hates Norman Finkelstein because Finkelstein is not on the same page as, say, AIPAC. As a matter of fact, they so strongly feel that Finkelstein is an apostate Jew and a traitor that the effort was made, I don't know if it was successful, I think it was, to deny him tenure as a professor at a university in Chicago.
Yeah, it was successful. That was done by Alan Dershowitz.
Dershowitz is just such an irritation. Oh, my God.
But Finkelstein's been called everything under the book, self-hating Jew, anti-Semitic, the whole nine yards. I don't really know what's going on here in America with approaching it sort of objectively. But when I study Zionism, you really have to study late 19th century Europe. And there are a whole sort of spectrum of different approaches towards finding some home for the Jews who were being persecuted all the way from Russia to England.
Right.
And I'm sure you sort of know that. So then they would have these intellectual discussions among themselves. Now, many of them didn't really, they spoke Yiddish. There was no Hebrew, for example. And there are certain lines. For example, if I were to talk with somebody and who claims to be an authority, and I would say, do you know who Vladimir Jabotinsky is?
Right, right.
Well,
he was the one that I believe that came up with the idea. But where are you going with this?
Well, right? where I'm going with this is that if you don't study the whole thing,
well, yeah, but you can. I think that's true with just about every topic. If you don't study it, and you don't know what you're talking about. That's why over the past since the first Intifada, when I was approached by not just Palestinians but also American Jews to get myself educated and to understand what the Intifada was about, what the rights of the Jews were in Israel, what the establishment of the State of Israel was about, what the rights of the Palestinians should be, yada, yada, on and on and on. I thought my head was going to break open from the reading and the study. Or as Myra Kahana asked me one time, what's your scholarship? And when I told him what I had read, then he wasn't so eager to just call me a stupid goy that I didn't know what I was talking about, because he understood that I did know what I, not to put myself on an intellectual level with Myra Kahana, which I never was, but around the issue of the Palestinians and the Jews in Israel, I could at least hold my own, even against a learned rabbi like Myra Kahana. And it's for that reason that I get furious, absolutely almost a spittle flying furious when someone either A, suggests I don't know what I'm talking about, B, accuses me of being an anti-Semite. Zionism and Judaism are two entirely different concepts. And when these issues come up, it's infuriating when I have a tin horn sitting next to me on a stage that doesn't belong to either one of us make a veiled suggestion that I'm in favor of the extinction of the Jews, or I don't understand when I'm sitting there beating the living Christ out of him with facts. So I don't know what to say, Jonathan, except I want to leave it and move on. All right. Well, I meant Ron. Ron, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Now let's go to Jonathan in Oklahoma City. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Mike, that's funny. We all love you. I do think that you know what you're talking about. And really all I wanted to say is Joe Lieberman is a traitor to the Democratic Party. And if somebody out there wants to call me anti-Semitic, that's fine. But his agenda seems to match Tel Aviv's agenda, and they want to screw American blood for the Jewish agenda. And, you know, to me, this straight across vote is ludicrous. And it just displays Joe Lieberman's real secret agenda. It's not for the United States of America, but for Tel Aviv. And that's my opinion. So if someone wants to label me anti-Semitic, fine. I mean, right down to the sheer fact that even after the lost election, he ran as an independent, a direct slap in the back, you know, the face of the Democratic Party. Well, who is this guy anyway? What is his agenda? Someone should really ask him that.
I don't care that much about, and Jonathan, thank you. I appreciate your call. I don't care that much about Lieberman's religion. The fact that he's an observant Jew is kind of beside the point to me. What I do care about is the fact that he was, discussion with Lieberman, he ran as a Democrat and he was defeated. And then in a manner that was kind of shocking, I guess that's displays my naivete, because Lieberman is a politician. He ran as an independent. Now, there are not that many independents in Connecticut, for God's sake. They're either Democrat or Republican. So what happened? All the Republicans voted. They threw their own man in the creek and voted for Lieberman as a way of sticking their thumb in the eye of the Democrats who wanted Lamont to represent him, who was a strong anti-war candidate. So all Lieberman is doing in return is giving everybody in the Democratic Party leadership the finger. And this is how he does it, the same way that Zell Miller did. Of course, Zell Miller now is, I don't know, he's either up in his mountains or he's in an institution somewhere. Maybe the same will happen to Lieberman. Who knows?
Love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Regarding that settlement in L.A. today, this is from Suzanne. She writes, the settlement was for $660 million. The L.A. Times writes, quote, but attorneys and advocates for the victims said they were skeptical of Mahoney's timing for the settlement, noting that the pact announced Saturday after 4.5 years of negotiations came just before the first case was set to go to trial, with the Cardinals slated to testify, and they said they fear they will never learn the full truth about the accused and those who may have shielded them, including Mahoney. The article goes on to say he avoided the number one thing he fears, which is disclosing under oath how much he knew and how little he did about predatory priests. That, according to David Clohessy, National Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. This whole Catholic Church thing to me, I'm trying to. I got an email from someone who pointed it out to me. I don't have the email in front of me. How old this priest abusing children really is, and it goes back. Oh my God! I mean, like forever. It's something from centuries ago, and it just there has been nothing that has had the result of making priests stop it. Stop the child abuse. Stop buggering children. I mean, what is that about? Good God in heaven, so to speak. So it's. What was the book that mentioned this that was written a couple of hundred years ago? What the hell? I wish somebody would send it to me. Some of you people are much smarter than I am, and you have this stuff at your fingertips, and I sit here and struggle trying to remember a title or an author. Oh well, one of you will come up with it. But this whole Catholic Church thing, I don't understand how parishioners can continue to support a Catholic Church. You know, I can remember in the Bible, Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. Now, the Protestant fundamentalists would tell you that the Bible is literal truth. Okay, if that's the case. And if Christians and Catholics and Protestants are still all Christians, it's just their liturgical rites and their symbolisms are different, then what the hell is all of this support for the established Catholic Church? I mean, what is that? Vatican City and the trillions of dollars globally that the church owns, while there are people on this planet who are eating dirt for supper, kids that are dying of worms popping out of their bodies in countries that claim to have a strong Catholic presence, and it takes Jimmy Carter to try to go to work to fight that. He's a Protestant fundamentalist. Where in the hell is the Catholic Church on issues of poverty and disease and sickness and child abuse and I mean, it just goes on and on and on. To me, the most inauthentic religion crushing the human spirit right now is Catholicism, the Catholic branch of Protestantism. The Catholic branch of Christianity. These right-wing fundamentalists, Protestants, are just nutballs. They're almost entertaining, as long as they don't get any power. If they get power, they're going to slit the throats of every atheist, every gay, every Jew, every Catholic, and probably every woman who doesn't put on the... a fundamentalist equivalent of a burqa. God, I despise religion, but the whole Catholic Church thing, the Roman Catholic Church thing, to me, throughout history, what good have they done? When? Oh, I know, liberation theology in Central America. Okay, but the church hated it. That was a few renegade priests who took a look at what was going on and said, wait a second, this is not right. But while I say that about Christianity, of course, or Catholicism, the Catholic branch of Christianity, I could say it in my own little universe, inside my own little warped head, I could say it about any religion. But I see Catholic, wasn't it the Roman Church that came up with the Crusades and the Inquisition, and as the Crusaders marched across Europe, they would stop to water their horses and find something to eat and murder whatever Jews were living in the nearest villages. Hell, this is back in the 11th century, 12th century. This is vile, ugly, horrifying, disgusting, contemptible, miserable crap. And it goes on. For centuries, for millennia, this has gone on. And still it goes on. So Cardinal Mahoney said, okay, we'll settle $660 million. Is that enough? Huh? Okay, is that okay? 300 years from now, if there is a globe, if there's a population, if there are people, if there are nations, if there's a Catholic Church, they'll probably be trying to settle then, too, against another round of charges of buggery and rape and child molestation and absolute crimes committed in the name of their perverted religion. It's just, I can't stand it. Okay, who haven't I pissed off tonight now? Huh? I got the Schultz followers, I got the Jews, I got the Catholic Christian. Who else? Who's left?
I'm not particularly angry with you yet. So
well, maybe during this break.
Did you say something earlier about I was hippie? Something about my...
Maybe during this break I can figure out something to piss you off, okay? We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Your phone calls primarily when we... Oh, wait a minute. I do have something. The ever-changing definition of the mission in Iraq. This is from Think Progress via our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back, about 7 before the hour. Okay, I got it here. I got it. A.E. had written into me, Mike, the Catholic Church acts as though it's only a few 20th century American priests who raped little boys. The 1759 book Candide by Voltaire included a secondary story of Jesuit priests as sexual predators. Voltaire wrote with an assurance that everybody reading his book expected the priests to behave that way. And this was hundreds of years ago. Who do the modern-day Catholics think they're fooling? And then Reggie sent in the following, Sacramentum Ponitentiae was an apostolic constitution published by Pope Benedict the 14th in 1741. Now notice the date there. That predates Candide by 15 years. It was published by Pope Benedict in 1741. It is a four-page document establishing general notice of the problem of sexual abuse among the clergy in the Roman Catholic Church. It was the fifth document in the canon law book that was used to train all priests between 1918 and 1982. Specifically, the Sacramentum Poenitentiae addresses the soliciting of sex from people, including children, by priests during confession. Here, touch this and you'll be forgiven. The document has been cited often in legal battles surrounding the sexual abuse of children by the Catholic clergy, usually as a rebuttal to church officials' claims that they were unaware of the occurrences of abuse. Well, yeah, if it's been going on for 250 years, that at least it's been written about for 250 years, I don't know. What do these people think? That they go to their own confession, forgive me, Father, for I've sinned, I've been buggering children, and that, you know, Jesus is going to say, oh, okay, that's cool. One more note about the trip to Sacramento. I have a new best friend out there. His name is Marlon, a social activist, to say the least, but he's also a restaurateur. Is that how you say that? Restaurateur? He owns a restaurant, I think it's the Fremont section of Sacramento, called the Asteroid. And I'm sorry, Seattle. I said Sacramento. In Seattle. Thank you, Kathy. She screams into my ears. In Seattle. It's in the Fremont section, and it's the Asteroid restaurant. And I'm going to be talking about the Asteroid restaurant. It is it's Italian food. But it's not, I don't know how to, it's Italian with a northwest, it's got a northwestern, the Pacific Northwest flavor to it. And I went there Friday night after doing the gig at KPTK, and a couple of people, and Marlon and I went, he invited us over, and we went over and had a couple of bottles of the best wine I think I've ever tasted, Italian wine. Now, no offense to our friends in the land of Oz, you know, I still drink Australian wine, but this Italian wine was just astonishingly good. And he fixed us a couple of late night snacks that was just incredible. And I'm just suggesting here that if you live in Seattle or you're going to Seattle, go see Marlon. This is a very affordable restaurant, trust me. But it's called the Asteroid, and it's in the Fremont section. And I'm probably going to be talking, you know, like our friends in New York at the Raven, remember? So now we have two places, Kathy. Why did I call you Robin? We have two places to go. The Raven, I know Raven, Robin, whatever. We have two places to go now. The Raven on the East Coast, he moved. He's in Brooklyn, right? He moved to Brooklyn?
Or Sacramento. I'm getting very confused.
Never mind.
See, it's the Raven in Sacramento.
No.
With the...
All right, stop. So I called you Robin.
Candlestick in the library.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at an email here from Robin. From Robin, who wrote to me about...
everybody going to the Hungry Unicorn in San Diego.
No, stop. You're driving me insane. Go visit in Seattle the Asteroid restaurant. I've started to call it the Unicorn. See what you're doing to me? The Asteroid restaurant. And if you're in New York, check out the Raven.
Don't blame me. I'm going to blame the jet lag and hope you get a good night's sleep.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The ever-changing definition of the mission in Iraq. This was at Think Progress today. In June 2005, Think Progress noted that Bush was constantly revising the definition of our mission in Iraq. Reporting on his escalation strategy last week, Bush claimed satisfactory progress in many areas of the new mission in Iraq. Bush has changed the definition of our mission in Iraq so many times he's made it impossible for the American public, U.S. forces, or the Iraqi population to have any confidence that the mission will ever be completed. The pre-war mission was to rid Iraq of weapons of mass destruction. After the war began, the mission expanded when Bush said, "Our cause is just, security of the nations we serve, and the peace of the world, and our mission is clear: to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and free the Iraqi people. Our forces have been given a clear mission: to end a regime that threatened its neighbors and the world with weapons of mass destruction, and to free a people that had been suffering for too long." That was in April of 03. In May of 03, the mission was complete. On Thursday, I visited USS Abraham Lincoln, now headed home after the longest carried deployment in recent history. I delivered good news to the men and women who fought in the cause of freedom. Their mission is complete, and major combat operations in Iraq have ended. May 3rd, 03. But then it continued again. July 30th, 03, Bush. "The United States and our allies will complete our mission in Iraq." Then the mission was to develop a free Iraq. November 4th, 03. "That has been our mission all along, to develop the conditions such that a free Iraq will emerge, run by Iraqi citizens." May 4th, 04. "We will see that Iraq is free and self-governing and democratic. We will accomplish our mission." And then, of course, it was to train the Iraqi troops. June 2nd, 05. "Our mission is clear as well, and that's to train the Iraqis so they can do the fighting, make sure they can stand up to defend their freedoms, which they want to do. We're making progress toward that goal, which is, on the one hand, a political process moving forward in Iraq, and on the other hand, the Iraqis capable of defending themselves, and we will complete this mission for the sake of world peace." That was June 20th, 05. November 30th, 05, it shifts again to advancing democracy. Bush. "We'll stay as long as necessary to complete the mission. Advancing the ideal of democracy and self-government is a mission that created our nation and now is the calling of a new generation of Americans." That was November 30th, 05. March 11th, 06. Protecting America from terrorists. Bush. "In the coming days, there will be considerable reflection on the removal of Saddam Hussein from power and our remaining mission in Iraq. By helping the Iraqi people build a free and representative government, we will deny the terrorists a safe haven to plan attacks against America." A week later, March 18th, 06, Bush. "We will finish a mission. By defeating the terrorists in Iraq, we will bring greater security to our own country. And when victory is achieved, our troops will return home with the honor they've earned." And then January 13th, this year, the mission was providing security for the Iraqi population. Bush. "In fact, we have a new strategy with a new mission, helping secure the population, especially in Baghdad. Our plan puts Iraqis in the lead." And then April 10th this year, Bush. "It's a combination of providing security in neighborhoods through these joint security stations and training that is the current mission we're going through, with a heavy emphasis on security in Baghdad." And now, June 28th this year, Bush. "It's a new mission, and David Petraeus is in Iraq carrying it out. Its goal is to help the Iraqis make progress toward reconciliation, to build a free nation that respects the rights of its people, upholds the rule of law, and is an ally against the extremists in this war." Thanks to Jordan Grossman for all this. So there you have it. It's madness. This is insanity beyond belief. The mission in Vietnam, as twisted and perverted as that was the Truman Doctrine, to contain communism where it was at the end of World War II. But at least there was clarity to that insanity. Bush and Cheney and the Bush crime family are literally, collectively, nuts.
We will stay the course until the job is done.
But we will stay the course.
We will stay the course in Iraq.
And yet we must stay the course.
We're just going to stay the course.
We're going to stay the course in Iraq.
We'll stay the course.
We could only find 8 times where he'd ever use the term stay the course.
They're to stay the course.
Stay the course.
We're going to stay the course.
Have the nerve to stay the course.
If we stay the course.
And hence the clarification.
We're there to stay the course.
We stay the course.
We will stay the course.
And we've never been stay the course.
8 times.
We're there to stay the course.
Stay the course and help them succeed.
We stay the course.
Our mission in Iraq is a vital mission. The mission is one that will be that we obviously couldn't complete if we didn't fulfill our goals.
You take my breath away.
21 past the hour. Well, this is interesting. Susie sent this in. Since 2002, this is what has been paid to victims of Catholic priest and their superiors' sexual abuse of children. Los Angeles, $774 million. Boston, $157 million. Portland, Oregon, $129 million. Orange, California, $100 million. Covington, Kentucky, $85 million. San Francisco, $73 million. Oakland, $56 million. Spokane, $48 million. Tucson, $36 million. Sacramento, $35 million. Louisville, $30 million. Hartford, Connecticut, $23 million. Milwaukee, $17 million.
Sounds like a list of Republican donors.
It does, doesn't it? It does indeed. How disgusting. How vile. How absolutely just demonic.
It sounds like someone needs to read a book about the high cost of sodomy. Good thing they own all that property.
Buggery.
What would the difference be?
Sodomy's fun.
I guess it depends on your perspective.
No, it depends on your age.
Well, that too.
You know, I'm giggling because it's a joke. But any sort of sexual assault on children, you know, I'm totally against the death penalty. Except, I guess I'm not. In certain cases, in certain situations, the destruction of the innocence of a child. What was this filthy subhuman down in Florida, Kathy, that raped the little girl and wrapped her in plastic and she was still alive and threw her teddy bear
in? Jessica Lunsford.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Gave her her stuffed dolphin so she wouldn't be afraid in the coffin he built for her as she suffocated to death.
Yeah, and he got the death penalty in Florida. And I, you know, I try to maintain a strong attitude against the death penalty because I understand that innocent people have been executed in this country, and innocent people, as long as you have the death penalty and an adversarial system of justice, will continue to be executed. So for that reason, I try to be steadfast in my opposition to the death penalty. And then something comes up like that case. And I feel like there are nails sticking into my brain. I just don't know what to do. When I saw that miserable-looking son of a bitch on television, I wanted to say to the family in the state of Florida, look, y'all, save your energy. Just give him to me. All right, back to phone calls. I'm sorry. Alex is calling from Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going.
Well, I want to say a couple of things. Number one, I respect you very much because out of all the talk, you know, radio hosts that I listen to, you're a pretty knowledgeable man, and you're really usually getting really, really deep, and it's amazing. I respect it a lot. But tonight, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in you because you've been kind of full onslaught of Catholic bashing. Don't get me wrong. Let me just start by saying that I think that molestation of children is deplorable, and the cover-up of molestation of children is even more deplorable. But that being said, you cannot just trash an entire faith.
Oh, sure, I can.
An entire religion.
Oh, sure, I can, Alex.
Hold on a second.
No, absolutely, I can trash it. Sure, I can. I'll tell you what, I hear what you're saying, but let's set aside the horrific crime of child molestation. Let's go to the Inquisition. No, let's set that aside. Let's go to witch burning. No, let's set that aside. Let's go to the destruction of Jews throughout history. No, let's set that aside. Let's go to the Catholic Church's support of Nazism. Now, let me tell you something, Alex. If you're a Catholic and you want to subscribe to that kind of a demonic faith, then have at it. But
okay,
don't. Wait. Don't call me on my program and try to tell me that what I'm saying against the Catholic Church is not valid. The Catholic Church is it, the church. I'm not talking about the people who might decide they want to follow that religion. That's a whole different issue. The Catholic Church is a chamber of horrors and always has been.
Combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Oh, really? You know, Bush's buddies, the Saudis, Bush always talks about democracy in the Middle East. He's a lying son of a bitch. He's no more interested in democracy in the Middle East than he's interested in fleas in his underwear. But how about Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia. Here's the news story from Saudi Arabia. A young woman named Rizana Nafik, a 19-year-old housemaid from Sri Lanka, has been sentenced to death, beheading, because a baby in her care died while she was bottle feeding him. If her appeal is turned down, she would be taken to a public square to be publicly beheaded. The Sri Lankan government says it's working for a reprieve and has until today to file the plea. A last-minute pardon by the infant's parents also could spare her. But if her execution goes ahead, it will be the latest in a surge of beheadings that could surpass the kingdom's record of 191 in 2005. The figure for 2007 beheadings already is at least 102, including three women, according to Amnesty International. Beheading always has been the punishment meted out to murderers, rapists, drug traffickers, and armed robbers in Saudi Arabia. Whether what Nafik did amounts to murder never has been spelled out by courts or other officials, but Saudi authorities, facing criticism from foreign human rights groups, insist they are just enforcing God's law. Well, by the way, this young woman that the Saudis are preparing to behead didn't even have a lawyer at her trial. She was denied one. She arrived in the kingdom May 4, 2005 to work as a housemaid. She was given the additional duty of looking after a baby boy, a job the Sri Lankan embassy says she was not trained to do. The Sri Lankan embassy says the infant died May 22nd while she was bottle feeding him. Nafik allegedly confessed, but then recanted, saying her admission was obtained under torture. The Asian Human Rights Commission said it was an accident. The child was choking, it said. And Nafik, quote, was desperately trying to help by way of soothing and stroking the chest, face, and neck of the baby, end quote. An estimated 6 million foreign workers, many of them Asian, serve a Saudi population of 22 million. Of the 102 people executed by beheading so far this year, half were foreigners. Shuhaila Hamad of Saudi Arabia's National Society of Human Rights said, quote, Allah, our creator, knows best what's good for his people. Should we just think of and preserve the rights of the murderer and not think of the rights of others? End quote. Beheadings are carried out with a sword, with no photos allowed. Prisoners are sedated and then kneel, flanked by clerics and law enforcement officials. And the soon-to-be-beheaded person faces the victim's family. The prisoner is required to recite verses from the Quran while the government official reads the charge and the verdict. Halfway through the reading, the executioner suddenly nicks the back of the prisoner's neck with his sword, causing the victim to tense and raise his head involuntarily. Then, in one swift move, the prisoner is decapitated. A 19-year-old girl is going to be beheaded because God's justice declares that because she was feeding a baby and the baby choked to death, she's a murderer. And then this from the L.A. Times. Although Bush administration officials have frequently lashed out at Syria and Iran, accusing it of helping insurgents and militias in Baghdad, the largest number of foreign fighters and suicide bombers in Iraq come from Saudi Arabia. About 45% of all foreign militants targeting U.S. troops and Iraqi civilians and security forces are from Saudi Arabia. Nearly half of the 135 foreigners in U.S. detention facilities in Iraq are Saudi Arabian. 50% of all fighters in Iraq that come to Iraq as suicide bombers are from Saudi Arabia. Son of a bitch! You see? How about that? Does Bush talk about that? Do any of these filthy, disgusting Bush crime family members talk? No, of course not, because the Saudis are and have been for a couple of generations Bush business partners. So the next time you hear this disgusting, contemptible little creep in the White House talk about the Iranians, or if you hear this disgusting little creep in the Senate, Joe Lieberman, talking about the Iranians, and if you're within shouting distance, just shout out that 45% of all foreign militants targeting U.S. troops and Iraqi civilians are Saudi Arabians. And don't forget that of the 19 bombers that came to this country on September 11, 2001 to wreak death and destruction, if you believe the official story, were from Saudi Arabia. And don't forget that 4 days after the attack on this country by these Saudi Arabians, if you believe the official story, many, many Saudis, including the bin Laden family, were flown out of the United States before they could be questioned, and their safe passage was guaranteed by the Bush crime family and the FBI. Where were they from? Saudi Arabia. Is there anybody in this country left who doesn't understand that the Bush crime family and the Saudi crime family are working us together? Oh, my God. Oh, and by the way, I get lots of emails that are innocent in their content, and they say, boy, I'm glad you're back with Air America. Let me make something real clear. If the choice were given to me to be unemployed or go to work for Air America, I would be unemployed. As far as I'm concerned, Air America screwed me very badly, and that may come out eventually in a lawsuit. But I don't work for Air America, and I never would again under any circumstances, especially now that they've decided to go right wing. But my program is carried on stations that also carry Air America programming. I believe I'm on the XM satellite radio channel that identifies itself as the Air America channel. Now, that's all well and good, but let me state for the record, please, because I get tired of sending emails. I mean, I don't blame you. You don't know. It confuses me. I do not work for Air America. I work for the Nova M Radio Network that is founded and owned by the two people who, in fact, started Air America and then got screwed worse than me. So just again, I'm not saying, you know, you're a bad person because you assume I work for Air America, because the bleed through. Ed Schultz doesn't work for Air America either. So it's difficult to tell the players apart. But just for the record, I do not and would never again work for a company like Air America.
And after everyone, every group, every entity that you've attacked tonight, we hope we still work for Nova M tomorrow. And before you go back to calls, I just want to see you did Harrison, you did Schultz, you did Jews, you did Catholics, you did lazy Democrats. Do you have any racist remarks or homo bashing that you wanted to get out before you went back to the... Back to the phone.
Well, give me a couple. Kathy, I still have 17 minutes
you
left
do.
In the program. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to attack the blacks or the gays or the Asians or as my grandparents used to call them, the Orientals, which I always thought was particularly awful, feel free. You
okay,
still have 15 minutes, and there might be one or two sponsors that haven't left yet.
Thank you, and amen. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I'm just thinking of Molly's college fund, you know?
Yeah, we had to use that for a mortgage payment a couple of eight months ago before I came. No, I
needed to buy that Coca-Cola yesterday.
No, I'll say it again. I feel very secure working for Nova M because I'm working for two people who understand me, understand the point of view I take, and I'm not saying that Shelley and Anita agree with everything I say. I'm not in a million years, but they understand what progressive. Talk radio should be, what liberal talk radio should be, and I have to say that Shelley and Anita have never, ever, ever tried to censor or stop me from saying anything. And Shelley and Anita are Jewish.
Well, neither did Air America until they just called us one time and said, you're not on the air.
No, yes, they did. Oh, yes, they did. And you know full well how many times that went on. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Engineered the program in Phoenix at our flagship station, KPHX. Also answered your calls, which effectively makes him the co-producer. Our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. The moderator at the NovemRadio.com chat room tonight, Billy Foster. And the moderators at the MikeMalloy.com website message board. The militant moderators there. And just for the record, you know, you can't plead your case to me. If you run into trouble with the moderators, you got to plead your case to them. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Michelle is calling from Mississippi, listening on the internet. Hey, Michelle.
Oh, Mike, what a pleasure to talk to you again.
It's all mine.
I'm not mad at you at all.
Well, thank you.
And I want to thank you because you give me hope. And, you know, we're in Mississippi now. Stars and I kind of pretty much traded places. I get here 3 weeks after he moves out.
Who moved out? Sarge?
Sarge, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, he's in Phoenix now.
Right.
And anyway, listen, the Palestinian thing, I thank you so, so, so much for standing up for a people that just, are completely crapped on, and I've spent a fair amount of time in Israel and in East Jerusalem and Gaza, West Bank, And I was never treated better than I was by the Palestinian people as an American, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's just so nice that I think you're brave, and I love that you stand up for people. And it just makes me feel good. We're here now. We were supposed to go back to California, but it ended up that we get sent to southern Mississippi with the Air Force. And my Air Force husband is getting CCAT shipped out at some time, put in the bucket now, and the war goes on, the occupation goes on, the nonsense goes on, and I tune into you, and it's the only thing that makes me feel sane.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Michelle. I appreciate that sentiment, and thank you very much for calling in. And I want to say it again, in case you missed it, what I said earlier in the program. The people most actively working for peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and I think I'm right in this. Let me just change it a little bit. The organizations working most actively and strongly for peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis are organizations based in Israel. And they are comprised of Jews and some Palestinian Arabs and I guess a few Palestinian Christians who refuse to accept a continuation of this murderous chaos in that country. So, you know, I've had a couple of friends say that when they went to the Middle East on the Eyewitness Israel program or just traveling on their own or going with a church group or whatever, how well they were treated by Palestinians. You will be equally well treated by Israeli Jews. The question, the problem arises when the issue of what Israel is to be and what is to become of the Palestinian people arises. That's where the madness, the insanity, the murder, the craziness comes to a focal point. But again, I cite very good sources on this. I just want to make it clear that people understand, that I understand, that some of the people working most ardently for peace in the Middle East are Israeli Jews and their organizations, which includes Palestinians, but these are organizations based in Israel. Please keep that in mind. Please. Every time I bring up this issue... Now, I don't think it's happened tonight. I'm not saying anything about the callers or the emailers tonight. But every time I bring up this issue, it seems to open the door to real anti-Semites. I have no use for anti-Semites any more than I have use for people who are anti-Palestinian. I just don't. I'm not interested in what you have to say. I've read your garbage, your stuff. I know who you are. I know what you believe. Yada, yada, yada. I'm not interested. I just am not interested. What I really am interested in is what I think most Americans and Palestinians and Israeli Jews are interested in, and that's justice. That's all. That's just justice. Decency. You know, I don't care how you slice it. Arabs and Jews are cousins, aren't they? Or Muslims and Jews, I should say, are cousins, aren't they? Aren't they? Don't they share the same head prophet? What was it, Abraham?
I thought his name was Marlon.
Marlon?
Or Harold? Or no, you're talking about something else. Are you sure? You got 30 seconds. You don't want to say anything homophobic or racist?
No, not tonight. I'll do it tomorrow night. Y'all have a great night. The producer here is starting to melt down. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. Okay. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.